I've seen you all asleep during services, so I know you, some of you could. But I'm not good at that at all. Just a week. So next week, Ashley's going to be taking the class, and I appreciate that very much. He's got lesson 9, and I told him he can hand it out when he wants to. I'm going to go ahead and send the email copy, though, to Jim, so that Jim can send that when he feels it's good. We've spent a lot of time, and we're still in chapter 5. And that's because there's so much good and rich material. And a lot of it builds upon what's in chapter 5. And so you kind of got to get chapter 5 down. We're discussing the righteousness of being a part of God's kingdom. Kingdom righteousness, we might call it. And we have seen several references to this already. We have seen in chapter, or we will see, we've mentioned it, but in chapter 6 and verse 33, you might say that that is the central thought of the sermon. It's the central admonition. When Paul says there, it's been a long day. Jesus says there in verse 33, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you. So this righteousness, there's a couple of righteousnesses that we could talk about. There's the righteousness that we can have because God makes us righteous. Who remembers in Romans chapter 4, the example that we have there of someone that believed God, he made a promise. God made a promise to this individual. And it says in the text in verse 3 that this person believed God and God counted it as righteousness. Who was that? Abraham. And I've been enjoying Sean's class, all of his classes. But boy, you could just go into one or two lessons about Abraham himself and the great faith that he had, listening to God, obeying God. And he is the father of us. The book of Galatians says he's the father of the faithful. He's not only the father of the Jewish people, but he's the father of all who believe. So in the Beatitudes, one of the Beatitudes talks about blessed are those who hunger and thirst for what?
Righteousness.
For righteousness. For they shall be filled, Jesus says there. Now, that righteousness, I think, is not exclusively the righteousness of our works, but I think that that's involved. I think it also pertains to wanting to be righteous, to do right, to be right before God is more important than anything else. And that individual, if he hungers and he thirsts for it, that individual is going to be filled. God will know his heart. He will know what he wants, what he desires. But we saw that Jesus, in chapter 5 and verse 20, gives a warning to those that are listening. And he says, unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Well, you've got to do better than the scribes and Pharisees did. And in noting the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees and us beginning to talk about it, what seems to be true as we started to look at the contrast that Jesus made when he again and again said, you have heard, but I say unto you, what seems to be the attitude so often of the scribes and Pharisees?
Make it look good.
And Ashley's going to talk about that next week. He's going to talk about doing your righteousness or doing your good works to be seen of men. I want us to go back. Let's go back to Exodus in chapter 21. Maybe it would be good for me to read this verse. Well, let's just go back there. Otherwise, I'm not going to get into the lesson. I'm not going to get it done, and I'm going to feel bad about it. So let's go back to Exodus chapter 21. So often, the scribes and the Pharisees, their view in giving instruction didn't have so much to do with the individual and the individual's heart. I want you to notice in Exodus chapter 21, and let's come down here, I think on your lesson sheet that I've got it, verse 22 through verse 24. Can somebody read that for me? Barry, can you read that for me? Exodus 21, 22 through 24.
I was in Galatians, sorry. Galatians 22?
Yeah, if you can find it.
Yes,
verses. Yeah, Exodus 21, 22 through 24.
Got it.
Smart aleck.
When men strive together and hit a pregnant woman so that her children come out, but there's no harm, the one who hit her shall surely be fined, as the woman's husband shall impose on him. He shall pay as the judges determine. But if there is harm, then you shall pay life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, strike for strike.
All right. In the last part of the chapter, and that's where we're going to, in Matthew chapter 5, as you come down here and you begin in verse 38, Jesus says, you have heard. I'm having the same problem getting there. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. For whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. A lot of people don't know what to do with these verses. They have no idea. How in the world do you apply these things? You surely don't think that if somebody hits you, that what Jesus is saying, well, go ahead and turn your face so he can hit the other side. Surely that's not what the Lord means. And I've seen classes turn into a discussion of what can you do to somebody that's trying to harm you. What can you lawfully do? What can you do if somebody's trying to break in your house? Can you hit them? Can you protect your family? What can you do? Because look at these verses, and they don't seem to make sense. And the first thing that I want to say, yeah, it sounds incredibly not just passive, but like you're inviting harm to yourself. And you're inviting others to take advantage of you. But I want you to see, first of all, the perspective from which the Pharisees and the scribes were speaking. Where did it say these things? An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Well, Barry read them from Galatians. Oh, that was Exodus. Barry read them from Exodus. And what is being addressed? What is the context there that is that we need to understand something about? Is this the law for Kristen? If somebody hits her so hard that it causes her to lose a tooth, then she can respond. According to the law, she can respond by hitting that person back and causing them to lose a tooth. Is that the context of Exodus 21? And your answer in unison is
no.
So what is the context, Bonnie?
The context in Exodus 21 is talking about the children of Israel receiving the law from God. And it's pertaining to what is just what is fair.
Okay, you're going in the right direction. So keep going. What is just and fair?
Just a few verses earlier, it was the judges making the statements, the sentences.
So yes.
The law of the courts on what constituted as justice and fair punishment when something's brought before them.
Yeah. Did you all hear what Jared said? That we're looking at something as though it goes to court. There's a case that's brought before a judge. And what has happened among the children of Israel, what has happened amongst God's people, is that someone has injured another individual to the point where that they've caused a tooth to be lost, or whatever. It goes on. It just isn't about teeth. It's about a number of things here. That's the context. So in other words, if Ashley says something nasty to me, what would the eye for an eye reasoning seem to say? It's okay, I can respond. In like kind, right? In like kind. If somebody does something that hurts me, that wrongs me, then in like kind, it's just. And doesn't that seem fair? I mean, in a sense, in a court of law, it is fair. The punishment should fit the crime. Sorry about that. Have a frog. The punishment fits the crime. And so Jesus says, this is what you've heard. This is what you've been taught. That when people are nasty towards you, if they don't want to talk to you, I'm not going to talk to you either. You're going to ignore me, I'll ignore you. You're not going to ask about my kids, I'm not going to ask about your kids. Does a lot of the world live by that kind of, you know, rule of thumb? That it's okay for me to react towards others in what I perceive their actions to be towards me.
Almost.
Huh?
Almost. I think the law that people actually is one of accelerated retaliation.
Yes. Yeah.
It hurt me to this degree, therefore I have to make you hurt to that degree, and that's an escalation.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So Jesus is saying, that's not the way that God's law works. That's not what God intended. That's not the righteousness that God expects of you if you're going to be a citizen in his kingdom. He expects you. Now, stay with me here. Rather than striking back. And why would you strike back? What obviously is happening here?
You got hurt.
You got hurt. And you got hurt not just physically, right? Inside, you're upset. You're fuming. You're mad at the person.
Fight or flight.
Huh? Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but...
Yeah, that's the way we're built. When someone hits you, you have a response. Either you're going to run away or you're going to fight.
Yeah, but the flight isn't in here, though. Unless what you're saying is that Jesus is saying, flee, and that's not what he's saying. He's not saying flee. He's saying that our attitude as a Christian is such that, no, I'm not going to hit you back. I'm not going to harm you. It would be better for me to endure wrong twice. It would be better for you to repeat the wrong towards me than for me to get to that level and for me to behave in that way. So, if you hit me, rather than sin against you, rather than my having these feelings of malice in my heart towards you, rather than striking back towards you, better for me to just turn my face. Now, brethren, these are statements that are meant I'm convinced they're meant to cause the people to say, what? What is he saying? Just like we saw in the Beatitudes, a lot of paradoxical statements. And what that should do is cause people to think and to say, what does he mean? What does he mean? And if somebody says, hey, I need your coat, or I'm not sure the order here and what they say, but he wants your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. Whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. You are going to be of such a heart, you're going to be of such a quality of heart, that the last thing that you want to do is to respond in a sinful way towards somebody else, and you would be willing to even endure them asking more of you than is reasonable. You would be willing, because you have a love. We're talking about a radical kind of love in these verses that we are developed towards others. I want us to look at Brother Earnhardt's introductory comments on the lesson sheet. He says, this section of the sermon begins with a consideration of how the kingdom citizen is to deal with his own inclinations to evil. Okay, yeah, we saw that. That they said, thou shalt not murder. Jesus said, nuh-uh, that's not... If you're angry with a brother without cause, without a reason, that's wrong before God. That's a sin before God. If you say something maliciously about your brother, that's wrong. That's wrong. He talks about the sin of the evil, and that's an evil, brethren. It's an evil. If we become angry with others in an unreasonable way, we're not talking about what we mentioned last week in Ephesians 4, being angry and sin not. That's not what we're talking about. But if we become angry in an unreasonable way against others, there's something going on in there that shouldn't be going on. There are some feelings in the heart that are not what God wants them to be. And Jesus deals with four different areas here about this inclination towards evil. He talks about the inclination to not guard our eyes, because actually it's only adultery that God condemns, is what the scribes and Pharisees would say. It isn't just the actual involvement with someone that you're not married to that's wrong. It's looking to lust after someone in your heart. That's wrong. That's wrong. The idea of divorcing your wife, the mate of your youth. I don't know. She's kind of argumentative. I've noticed that lately. And she knows I don't like that kind of pizza. Yet she orders it every single time. She has no thoughtfulness for me whatsoever. I'm sure that woman at work is not like that. I'm sure she's not like that. Brethren, it's a wrong. It's a wrong to feel that way against our mate. It's wrong to think, how can I get out of this marriage? How can I find a way that I can move on and I can find somebody that's going to really love me and want to do the things I want to do and eat the kind of pizza I want to eat? What can I do? Well, guess what? Some of the rabbis, they gave permission to divorce. They misused Old Testament scripture in the book of Deuteronomy. And some of the rabbis said, basically for any reason, you can do that. Now, there were other conservative rabbis that said, no, you have to be able to find some unclean thing. And, of course, that got kind of... in order to do that. That's wrong. There's an evil that someone would want to put away the wife or the husband of their youth. There's something wrong with somebody says, how can I get out of this promise? How can I get out of this agreement that I've made or this arrangement that I've made? We've got to do something with oaths so that some need to be taken seriously and others don't need to be taken seriously. We need to do something with that. So I think that Earnhardt is correct in saying that this section has started by talking about an inclination that, sadly, that we may have towards evil in our heart. Need to get rid of that. Need to be changed. But then he addresses the idea of what do you do with evil in other people. Yeah, Rob?
You know, this whole section, Rob, is... You know, when I think about this, I think this is quite a... in this area where our light would shine in lives. Mm-hmm. Because in Romans 12 it says, do not be conformed to the world. Don't do what other people do, but do lash out, retaliate,
yeah,
or fight.
Yeah.
Be different. Like,
yeah.
You're called to be a different people.
Yeah.
And so not be conformed, but be transformed by changing our mind, mm-hmm, how we would interact. But the Matthew 5:41 is actually the whole company has built our service model based on Matthew 5:41. You know, he who compels to go one, go two. And as we know that in the Roman law that a soldier could tell anybody.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Here's my armor. And
yep.
They were compelled, no matter what they do, they had to drop and pick up that armor, and they were compelled to go 1 mile. But at that mile marker, as a Jew, I could go, boom, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Right? And yet, what Jesus is saying, go two.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking,
yeah,
this visualization,
yeah,
I'm a Roman soldier,
yeah,
we're walking, I could care less about you.
Right.
But at the mile marker, I expect I'm going to be looking for another Jew to carry my
girl. Yeah.
And then you keep going. I'm like,
yeah, what's with that?
It's 1 mile here.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to carry two. And I have to think that on that second mile, I, as a soldier, I've got to find out, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
What compels you? I mean, you're different. So, and maybe at that point, Jesus is asking us to be a witness, to say, be different so that my light, that your light will shine, so that I might be seeing the glory that you might. So I'm thinking the soldier would go up, hey, he's looking around, hey, who are you? What are you doing?
Right.
The guy tells him, and
right,
all of a sudden, it's like, you know, maybe it changed,
right,
some of these soldiers to ask, who is this Jesus that you serve?
Yeah. No, I think that's a wonderful point. And I think that the illustration about, I had forgotten about the Roman soldiers compelling. But, you know, we are, this is such an opportunity when we do the unexpected. Now, don't just do the unexpected. Do the unexpected because it's in your heart. Ryan?
I was just going to add to Rob's comments that I don't think verses 38 through 42 are really all that different from 43 to 48. It's just talking about being different than the natural man.
Mm-hmm.
In verse 46 there it says, you know, love those that, you know, when you love those that love you, you're different than the tax collectors, and that's natural. And so what it's saying in 38 through 42 is asking us to do something that's unnatural. It's natural to retaliate. It's not natural to kind of turn away and not retaliate.
It has to become natural for us, doesn't it? The word nature in Ephesians 2, talking about, and I can't quote the verse, Jared may be able to, that it Paul talks about that we were by nature children of wrath. Well, that doesn't mean in that text that we were born that way. The idea is you become something through repeated action. I think that Derek has used this illustration. I may be wrong. Maybe Ryan. Maybe Joe. I don't know. But the illustration of what happens in sports. How do you get to be a good second baseman? You repeat those fielding actions over and over and over and over and over again until, guess what? It becomes natural for you. A ball is hit your way. This is what you by nature now do. This is what you're prone to do. Yes, Lisa.
I just want to say, it really makes a world of difference in your temperament when someone gives an apology as well as godly sorrow when there is a lie involved. You just don't sit up there and just let that go. You have to have these things come to play, to pass. And when it doesn't, then you're going to have some feelings, okay, because you're diminishing it. Show godly sorrow, then that person can understand. When there's no godly sorrow, no apology, I'm sorry for doing these things to you, then how's the person going to feel?
Well, I understand what your point is, and there is some precedent for what you're saying about asking forgiveness. How many times should my brother come to me and ask forgiveness, and I'd be willing to forgive him? But we're not talking about circumstances that necessarily where someone apologizes. We're talking about circumstances where that you're going to behave the way God wants you to behave no matter what others are doing. And it may be completely shocking to people that you would do that. You ever go into a mall and you're headed for a parking space and it's right there and there's a lady driver, you can bet, or a teenager, and they zap into that space right in front of you. Well, brethren, it cannot be our nature. It cannot be our nature to let that bother us. And in fact, we meet them inside right in front of the ice cream place and they're getting in line. Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Just to be clear.
Yeah.
I don't think we can control whether it bothers us or not, but what we do with whether it bothers us. I mean, if somebody does that right in front of me, there's going to be that impulse, a real quick impulse, but I have to control and fight that, right? Isn't that
much? That's at the beginning.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that you finally get to the point, though. Well, that you've just, you understand. That's the way men act in this world.
It should get easy.
That's the way people act in this world. They're not going to do what's right in regard to you. They're going to behave by, I'm not taking away from, that, yeah. But I do think that over time, that as you think about these things and you pray about these things and you work on these things, that, okay, happened again.
I got slapped in the face when I was in high school. I was just too lazy to chase the person down.
Well, I'm not going to comment on that. I'm not going to comment on that. Matt?
Yeah, I think this passage is interesting from a couple different perspectives. And one thing I was thinking about is, I feel like in our world today, we're told how valuable our lives are. My life, my existence in this world is more valuable to me than anything else could possibly be. And I think we're hit with that on a very regular basis. And I think it really kind of comes to show in things like what we've been talking about. My life or my happiness or whatever is the most valuable thing to me. And if you threaten that, I want justice.
Right.
I want the right thing to be done.
Yeah.
And it's this mindset that when I look at who's saying this, you could argue that Jesus' life was the most valuable life in the world. He lived a life, no sin, did nothing wrong. And he's saying, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Let it go.
Yeah.
And for us to go, you know, you have wronged me. I need justice. You know, where I think a lot of this kind of tends to go, you mentioned that there's discussions that go into, you know, defending yourself and things like this, and it's like, you know, if I'm defending my own life and somebody's threatening it, is my life more valuable than theirs? You know, there's a lot of things, you know, I'm responsible for my family. There's, you know, I'm responsible for spreading the gospel. I can do great things with my life.
Yeah.
But to think that my life's more valuable than theirs, it's just, to me, when I look at this passage, it's an easy one for us to kind of go into it with this attitude of, I have to justify the way I'm living my life, and I have to make this passage fit it. Where looking at it from Jesus' perspective of, I'm going to do the greatest thing in the world. My life is so valuable, but I'm just going to let it go.
Yeah, and I don't know if we recognize it. If we would do that, we turn out to be the winners. Because what we receive, what comes to us, I think both in this lifetime and in what God has promised, is incredible. If we could have that mindset, and that's why that I think that we can learn. I don't know if we can ever get to that point. I think that the idea of defending yourself and defending, that's kind of in a different category, in a way. This is an illustration that Jesus is using about the kind of, wow, it's almost like his statement about whoever comes to me has got to hate father and mother. Well, we know the word hate doesn't probably mean, you know, what so many think of as hatred. I've got a couple of hands. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, the only thing I think we need to be careful about is we shouldn't have the attitude, well, I'll just get over it. It won't bother me. There are things that need to bother us. And there's things that we need to fight for and stand for. Sin is sin.
Yeah, that's a different discussion.
Well, but I just don't want it to kind of bleed over, because I think, you know, if we think Jesus, you know, again, I'm just thinking about what Ed just said, that you know, he's telling us to kind of, you know, just, you know, let it go, you know, whatever. And yet, when Jesus came into the temple and he got the money changers there, he didn't just like, well, I'll let it go. You know, I don't want to upset anyone.
No, he was indignant because of what they were doing to his father's house.
So I don't want us to make sure that we do understand that in certain things we can't turn the other cheek. I mean, I understand that I don't want to take it out of context. I just want to be clear that sin is sin, and there are things that we cannot turn our back.
Well, we're not talking about turning our back here. We're talking about, are we going to allow a reaction that God would not be happy with? If I have a child that hits one of my other children, I'm not going to let it go.
You're going to turn it out
of him. I'm going to point out, this is wrong. You need to say you're sorry. You can't behave this way. There's something you're going to have to do now because you broke the rules. And that's not really what Jesus is getting at, is what I'm trying to say. That's not what Jesus is saying here. The point that he's trying to make is, it is like some of those beatitudes that you go, what? What did he mean by that? What is he saying there? His point is, there's nothing worth getting angry and sinning and having the wrong thoughts and being led into the wrong actions towards another individual. Justice is needed. We're not arguing that. We're not arguing that. But we're talking about personal circumstances here and how you're going to react when somebody does wrong to you. Yeah.
I'm just going to add on to that. It's within a perspective. It's within a context that you're saying, in that if we take it from a heavenly point of view, we're just sojourners in this world that Abraham did earlier. If our goal is to be in heaven, we need to look at it from a heavenly point of view. Is what happened here going to affect that in some way? That's what the real context, I think, is here. When he takes the Pharisees and Sadducees and says, not like them, they're following the letter of the law, not the intent of the law. The intent of the law is to take care of one another. to be there for each other, not to nitpick and say, nope. And they missed it entirely. I think that's the real key here is, when I look at this situation, what can I do to get more glory for God, what I can do? Shine, reflect God's glory.
A point that Rob made earlier that I think is so good, that Romans chapter 12, we're not to be conformed to this world, but we are to be transformed. That's the Greek word from which we get metamorphosis. And if you were looking at a transliteration of letter by letter, it's metamorphosis. It's metamorphosis. But how is that metamorphosis accomplished? How is that transformation take place? Rob said it. By the renewing of our mind. We have to have a brand new mindset. We've got to think differently. It's a change in the way we think. And Jesus is saying here, there's got to be a change in the way that you think. In regard to if somebody hurts you, if somebody wrongs you, there's got to be a change in the way that you think. It's not that you react and you try to hurt, but you would say, rather than react and hurt you back and rather to respond in a way that I know that God wouldn't want me to respond, I'm willing to absorb this and even allow it to go further. I know we could talk more about this. You'll have to do what you want to do next week, Ashley, you know, about some of these things. But Jesus makes a couple of points here as you go on in the text. He says, you've heard that you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Where did the old law, and we all know that in Leviticus that we are taught that we're to love our neighbor as ourselves. But where did it say in the law you should hate your enemy? Where did it say that? Well, it didn't. So how would they reach the conclusion, do you think, that it's all right to hate your enemy?
I think it's through scriptural manipulation. If you go back and look at what Leviticus says, you shall not hate your fellow countrymen.
Okay.
You may surely reprove your neighbor, but shall not incur sin against because of him. You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people, but you shall love your neighbors yourself. And I think they look at that and say, ah, so that is only applicable to my relatives, to the Israelite people. But anybody outside, we can go after them.
And in fact, Jared, what were they commanded to do when they went into the land of Canaan?
They were commanded to eliminate everybody inside the land.
Children? Women?
Yeah.
Everybody. Eliminate them. They come to these cities that God was going to give to his people. Now, did they think of the Canaanites as their enemies?
Yes.
Well, of course they did. Of course they did. So, what do you think would be included in their definition or their idea of hate? If I am allowed to hate somebody, what am I allowed to do? Or not do? Or not do?
To treat them fairly.
I don't have to treat them fairly, do I? I don't have to show any kind of compassion for them whatsoever if a person is my enemy. And Jesus, in this text, what does he say that you're to do for your enemies? Read these verses in verse 44. What are we supposed to do? Love them, and we won't talk about the different words for love, but love them, bless them, do good to them, pray for them. I ask you on the lesson sheet, do you feel that you can look at some instances in your life and say, yeah, I did that. Yep, I did. I did. And I try to make that my practice. Brethren, this is extraordinary teaching that Jesus is doing here. This is radical. What? Do good to them? And he gives the example here. Lisa, what was you had your hand, I'm sorry.
Said, hate in the Bible says it's like murder. Okay, so I don't hate anyone personally. But I believe Jesus would give a person time to heal from a wound and not, you know, force somebody on them. And so that's the same, you know, that's what I'm saying, but that's not hate. Sometimes you need some time. My sister taught me that. It's like, you know, you offended me, now I need some time to heal. And so you have to give that person that respect. That's not hate, that's respect.
Did I see a hand over here? No? Yeah, and there's a lot of different factors that we could bring into this discussion. I'm trying to stay away as much as I can from some of these different places we could go in our discussion. Jesus says he makes a couple of points about is it a hard thing to love those that love you, that you're related to, that greet you? And should you feel proud that I love Alex? He's a good guy. He really. Should I feel proud that I love a brother? Even the worst people in the world love their brothers. Not always. But a lot of them do. A lot of them do. Don't be proud of yourself. But if you can love those who would do you wrong, who have you become like? Who are you imitating? Jesus and our Heavenly Father. We're becoming like our Father. And that's what the Lord wants. He wants us to become like Him. And that's what children should do with the right parents. They should be coming like. We've hurried through some of this, and I apologize for that, but I do appreciate the discussion. Ashley will be teaching next week. Thanks, Nick.